Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd from ESPN. Dave, week one in the books for the Steelers. Of the 16 games, 14 have been played. I guess the stat I saw this morning on Mike and Mike is they're talking about how since the new playoff format, about 20 years of data, 70% of the teams that make the playoffs go 1-0 in week one, or 69%, I think, is the exact number. Last year, the Steelers got waxed on opening day by Baltimore 35-7. The score kind of feels the same if you look at it for last night's loss at Denver. But the reality is, as we just said to each other, with 3 minutes to go and Ben having the ball, Steelers were in this game most of the game. But as you pointed out already on the blog this morning, and Mike Tomlin said last night, a couple of the big plays went Denver's way. And in an NFL game, that certainly can make all the difference.
Absolutely. You hear the term explosive plays talked about a bunch. And that's one thing that I track throughout the year. And I'll have that up after week one is complete, is what's called the TOX stat, T-O-X. And that measures explosive plays and turnovers and a differential within those. And amazingly, although it felt like more, when you go back through and you look, believe it or not, the Steelers defense only allowed two explosive plays of 20 yards or more in the game. Now, one of those is not hard to remember, the 71-yard touchdown pass to Demaryius Thomas in the third quarter there, two-play drive after the Steelers had drove, 16 plays to settle for a field goal to eat up a good chunk of the third quarter there coming out of halftime. What a deflating thing that was. But only two explosive plays, both to Demaryius Thomas. That was 91 of his receiving yards on the night. And, when you throw that big play in there, which went for a touchdown, when you throw in the pick six at the end of the game, That's 14 points right there. And as you just said, to go into the final series there, offensive series for the – well, second to the last offensive series for the Steelers, to get the ball back with 3 minutes left and a chance to win the game, down 6 points at the time. For everything that happened in the game, at least you still had a chance to win it.
No question. let's take a look at the injury report. Really just two notable injuries, but a couple things I want to talk about. And I guess it's just the two offensive linemen, Gilbert with the hyperextended knee, and Ramon Foster, I guess, took a finger in the eye, right?
That's what I'm understanding. I haven't heard really. Did you read that it was a finger in the eye? It might have been. I haven't read that, but it was an eye injury of some sort is the way Tomlin characterized it.
Now, I heard somebody speculate, so I have not heard that confirmed.
And it very well could be, but I mean, it was termed an eye injury. So neither one of those guys returned. Foster, of course, replaced by Doug Ligursky, and rookie Mike Adams came in and played right tackle from there on out. And those happened in the second quarter there.
I didn't see. And I guess in hindsight, I'm guessing that the Foster injury happened first because we saw Gilbert go down.
Yes. A Foster injury happened, went to the sideline, and the guys on the radio, Wolf and Tunch, said he was standing next to Sean Kugler like he was ready to come back in. But evidently he wasn't cleared to come back in, and then he had left right before the half ended along with Gilbert to the locker room. So I had thought maybe when Gilbert went down, judging by the report that they had said on the radio that Foster was standing next to Kugler on the sideline, I thought maybe you'd see Foster come back into the game at right tackle after Gilbert went down. But
I speculated the same thing on Twitter. I was going to be interested to see the formation they went with. But obviously, if you're down to one guy, he's going to come in and play.
Absolutely, because they had only dressed 7 offensive linemen for the game. And, even my math, David, works out to 7 minus 2 = 5. And I know there's some rumblings out there this morning, well, the Steelers need to dress more offensive linemen. You only had one more to dress, and that's Kelvin Beachum. And trust me, based on his play in the preseason, long-term prospects of this kid is why he was kept. But he's not a kid that you're going to want in a game right away. So either, depending on the seriousness on these two injuries here, we'll see if they have to go out to the street to go get somebody. You've always got Ryan Lee that's sitting there on the practice squad as well. Bless you, but as well. But, we'll have to see how these injuries play out. Now, one thing Tomlin didn't mention injury-wise, man, we saw Emmanuel Sanders get rocked on a play. We saw Antonio Brown get rocked on the play. Both of those guys left, I think, for a couple of plays each at a minimum there. But evidently they were cleared to come back in. But I'm willing to bet they had some sore noggins and some sore necks this morning.
Dave, I got to tell you, I have almost zero doubt, at least from watching a lot of football in my life, that Antonio Brown hit the ground unconscious. I mean, it may have been just a split-second type of thing, but he landed dead on his face mask. He didn't have any control, looked like, of his limbs when he hit the ground. And I was actually even more concerned when Manny Sanders got hit, the way he rolled over. You know how when we see guys get in that kind of taunt position where all their limbs are taunt and then it goes soft? And I was really concerned that he was in bad shape. Happy to see that both of them were up and continued and seemed to have no ill effects. But those were scary moments. And I will say, in the heat of battle, you see those hits and it's upsetting, because it's physically upsetting to see a guy get hit like that and see his body react like that. And then, you think it's dangerous. But I'm not sure, having watched that hit again on Sanders a few more times, I don't think there was intent. And at the end of the day, it was hard for me even to tell if it was a full helmet-to-helmet hit and not a shoulder-to-helmet hit. It's just really unlucky. When you're going down like that and the other guy's coming down like that, he didn't look like he really led with his head. They made the call. I think it was the right call to make. But, I don't think anybody's trying to hurt anybody. It's a violent game, and you see it. We saw it on both those hits, and I'm awfully happy that both those guys got up.
I think the one on Moore, he's got to get fined, right? I mean, the hit on Sanders, I mean, to me, that was just so far after the incompletion had happened. Now, the one on Antonio Brown, I believe, is the other one. That was him just lowering his head, I believe, just a car crash happening there. But, I don't think it was, an intentional with meaning to deliberately hurt, but I mean, it was after the whistle. I mean, after the incompletion on the one to Sanders there. And I mean, just face it, if that's the black and gold on the other end of that, or if that's James Harrison, I mean, he's getting a game for that, in my opinion, is the way the league would look at that. But yeah, they were scary hits nonetheless on both those players.
So I guess, the good news is we haven't really mentioned the inactives, but the inactive list came out exactly how we expected it. Both Harrison and Mendenhall down for the game. Of course, Ryan Clark and Batch and Beachum, pretty much, the guys we thought would be out were the guys who were out. So the Steelers came into this game, you would say they came into the game reasonably healthy. You'd like to have, Clark and Harrison, but it became evident on Friday that Harrison wasn't going to go. And you've known Ryan Clark wasn't going to go since the day the schedule came out. So you're going to get a player back. I guess, Dave, before we get into the game and the analysis, one of the questions is, we saw the Steelers sign DeMarcus Van Dyke on Thursday or Friday, and David DeCastro goes to the IR. He's going to be out for a while. Regardless of the state of these two guys' injuries, do you think the Steelers try to get 9 offensive linemen on the active roster, or with 2 guys on the practice squad, are they fine having 10 bodies in total?
Well, I think it all depends right now on what happens with Foster and with Gilbert. I mean, as I mentioned, Ryan Lee, you could always call him up for a guard, but I mean, he's really a left side guard through the preseason. And the other guy that you have is Malecki there, and you know that's just not somebody that you want playing right guard for you, in my opinion, there as well. So you know they very well could go to the street here if you know if these injuries, if there is something serious with either Foster or Gilbert. But you know Tomlin said he didn't think that the knee injury with Gilbert was serious there. Yeah, Dave, funny you should bring up DeMarcus Van Dyke there too, because Mike Tomlin was asked about him pregame by either Bob Labriola or Bill Hillgrove, I forget who. But, you know, DeMarcus Van Dyke is a guy that Tomlin says they were interested in this young man when he came out in the draft in 2011. Obviously, we ended up with Curtis Brown and Cortez Allen, but he was within that group and in that range from a grading standpoint. I was at his pro day, says Tomlin. He's got big-time upside. He's an extremely fast guy. It was an opportunity for us to put a young cornerback in the mix and continue to work with him and develop his skill and see if maybe he can help us at some point. So, you know, that and along with what you said leading up into this with adding an additional lineman here, it all depends on the injuries here. You've got Ryan Lee. You've got John Malecki on the practice squad. Really, you know, Lee is a left-side guy. Malecki's a right guard only. I definitely don't think you want Malecki up there at this point. So, you know, who knows? You might see Trey Essex back on the roster here this week. That would be the logical choice. Or you might have to see them go out if they're needing a true right tackle, which, you know, I think they'll let Mike Adams have that spot initially. But, you know, you might have to see him, you know, go out on the street here and pick up another guy.
Yeah, I think Trey Essex is the guy who might make some sense just because they've got to come back and you know, immediately prepare for the Jets this week. You know, systems are systems, and offensive line continuity is something you'd like to have. Of course, there's an unidentified quote, in meaning the source isn't identified, that talks about the Steelers not being pleased with Trey Essex's performance in training camp and really not wanting to move forward with him and not having an interest in bringing him back. Now, you say that, but all of a sudden you have a bunch of injuries, and if you need somebody back quickly to contribute, maybe they reevaluate that. And of course, they've said that in the past. They said it 2 years ago about Max Starks. So, you know, desperate times, desperate measures, depending on the injury availability of these guys. And as you said, Mike Adams is the swing tackle, but they really don't have another guy who fits the bill in terms of Ryan Lee or Malecki on the practice squad, who's the tackle. As you said, Kelvin Beachum's not a guy that they're going to put out there as certainly at left tackle, and I probably would prefer not to do it at right tackle, prefer not to put him anywhere, to be honest. So, yes, that would be an interesting thing to look at here when we have the Mike Tomlin press conference tomorrow. Dave, I guess when we move forward here, we can talk about a lot of different things, but maybe when we start with the game, the Broncos win the opening kickoff, and we see both teams come out and run we'll just call it their conventional offenses. Both teams are in the huddle, and both teams have trouble moving the ball a little bit, and the whole tenor of the game changed when both teams went more or less to the no huddle. Now, how that actually impacted the game was dramatically different, with the Steelers having a huge time of possession advantage in these long drives that were continually converting third downs, getting some benefits by some penalty calls, and the Broncos having a different way of going about things, particularly in the third quarter where they just had the one long play. But what was your take in the first half of the game with both teams kind of coming out and trying to establish the running game?
Yeah, and I thought they would too, and I think we mentioned that leading up to this game too, especially on the Steelers' side of the ball. I thought that, you know, this was going to be the game plan to keep the ball out of Peyton Manning's hands, which, let's face it, the Steelers had some long drives in there that kept Manning on the sideline for quite a while there. But the thing was, when Manning came back in, especially when they ran that no huddle, they couldn't stop it. Now, I understand, and a lot of people, boy, let me tell you, there was already the fired Todd Haley crowd out, and the Twitter offensive coordinators were in mid-season form last night
on the second drive, after the second drive.
Absolutely, they say, why does he keep going run pass? Listen, you've got to keep Manning off the field. You've got to establish the run. This is one thing that Art Rooney II kind of alluded to. This is what Todd Haley kind of alluded to in the, you know, after his hiring there, was, you know, you've got to be able to run and run at will. And unfortunately, the Steelers were not able to run at will. They were running, but the interior of the line, I thought, did not play well. I have to go back, you know, when I get through and can grade this play-by-play here. But I didn't think Willie Colon played overly well. I didn't think Ramon Foster, before he left with his injury, played overly well. And I thought, you know, Pouncey, as a result, was just kind of an also-ran in there. Now, the grades will bear this out, of course. But, you know, what ended up happening is, for them to control the ball, you had Ben Roethlisberger having to convert a lot of third downs, which, I mean, that's one thing Ben Roethlisberger is great at, but you just don't want to make a habit out of doing that time in and time out. And luckily, he was able to do that extensive drives. But at the same time, when you do that and you get inside the red zone, this is one thing that I wrote about specifically in my keys to the game. You get in that red zone, you cannot come away with 3 points. You've got to come away with 7, because that's a win for Peyton Manning, if you ask me. I mean, because sooner or later, you weren't going to shut Peyton Manning out in this game. And if you think that the Steelers were, you're kidding yourself. You know, the goal is to keep him roughly 23 points or less and let your offense do the work. And here's a stat for you, Dave, that, you know, in some of my initial charting stuff, and figures that I have rolling here, in the first half on 14 first down plays, and I think this includes penalty as well too, 19 yards on 14 first down plays total in the first half.
Yeah, that's not good.
no.
You know, basically the plays that were made. So, you know, when we look at it, I guess, you know, when we take the game as a whole, the step back and the things that I would say is, look, they get beat on both lines. And we've talked repeatedly about getting pressure and getting turnovers. The Steelers got a lucky turnover, and they did make that into 3 points on the fumble that Larry Foote kind of jarred the ball loose.
Actually, they didn't turn that into points. That's what's...
Right. That was the one where they punted from and down them on the 1 yard line, right?
Through Butler.
And by the way, a very good play by Curtis Brown on that punt. To a gunner who went down, and he went into the end zone, which was a mistake, but he was smart enough not to then address the ball or make a play on the ball. He got himself back and got his feet reestablished in bounds, and at that point, I don't remember who exactly downed the ball. But
Van Dyke.
Yeah, a good job of downing the ball there on the half-yard line, and that was solid stuff. Now, Denver got out of that on third down, moved the ball forward. But I guess, Dave, the thing that bothered me is, as you say, the offensive line wasn't particularly good. Everything that happened in the running game, I would put it on the running backs doing the right thing in terms of it looked a couple times like I thought Redmond might hit a crease and be able to bust it through the 3 or 4 yard line of scrimmage area and get a bigger gain. That didn't happen. That happened a lot in the playoff game last year. It didn't happen last night. I don't really remember seeing Redmond in kind of open space almost at any point in the game. Dwyer, on the other hand, was very impressive, I thought. He ran incredibly hard. He bounced a couple outside and got yards where it looked like none were initially available. I would be surprised maybe if he doesn't supersede or, you know, take over the lead back running back role. Yeah, he was the more impressive guy, and he was the more impressive guy in training camp, and maybe it's just he's the healthier guy. But the larger point being, the offensive line was not particularly good. They, you know, 3 sacks at the end certainly are going to make the stats look a lot worse. But the defensive line as well, no pressure across Peyton's face, as you wrote on SteelersDepot.com today. And they got the 2 sacks, you know, a misread by the offense on one where Jason Worlds came in untouched. Larry Foote got one before that. But after that, I mean, there was virtually no pressure. It's, you know, they hands up and Peyton scrambled one time for a first down. But it's even hard to remember plays where you really felt Peyton was under a ton of pressure or duress. And he gets the ball out of his hand quickly, and he's going to make good reads. And when you do those two things, trouble for the defense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is another thing that I wrote about is you're not going to get it on him on the edge. So that means you're going to have to stunt a few times there. You're going to have to run that fire X or the zone blitz, which they ran early in the game with some limited success there. But after that, you know, they were able to pick it up. It looked like our blitzers were running into big, you know, a big a group of their offensive linemen there, and they were easily picking it up there. And I think McGahee picked one of them up pretty nice there for them. But if you're not getting it in his face, Manning's not going to let you, you know, most of the time get your pressure from the outside there, because he does get the ball out so quick. He does like the short, quick, precise developing route, so he's not holding on to the football. And when you look at that, and I also had a post this morning up on yards after the catch and all too. Of course, 70 of those came on the 71-yard touchdown by Demaryius Thomas. They gave up 126 yards after the catch, meaning that 127 of the 253 yards that Peyton Manning threw for, that's as far as the ball traveled in the air. Pretty amazing when you think of, you know, a guy throwing for 253 yards and the ball only traveling through the air 127 of those yards there. But, you know, that's what the stat breaks down to. But, yeah, if you're not getting pressure up the middle and across the face of Peyton Manning, you're going to get what happened last night. And, you know, they were pretty good at converting their third downs. Once they, as you mentioned, once they got into the no huddle there, the pressure stopped on the defensive line. We saw the rotation of Al Woods get in there, Cameron Hayward get in there as far as rotation packages. But that, the outside linebackers and the inside linebackers on the blitz, just the pressure stopped.
Right. We didn't see – We saw them pick all that stuff up. Dave, there's a tweet that just came out, Ike Taylor on Twitter, talking about, you know, it's a new day, no excuses. Basically, the boss wants, you know, to have us, you know, go do a better job, and, you know, God bless everybody. We know during the course of the week, Ike Taylor got it says, no excuses, no time to feel sorry for yourself. The boss just want to know how you're going to respond. Good morning to all. And we know that during the week, I guess on Friday, Ike and Stephen A. Smith got on it. Stephen A. Smith was very critical of Ike on First Take, his performance against Denver last year, and Ike didn't like the way he said it and went back at him in a series of tweets. And Stephen A. Smith responded with a series of tweets basically saying, apologizing for one aspect of it, but saying, look, man, you play bad. I'm going to say you play bad. I'm going to scream it, write it, telephone it in, the whole thing. And they basically went through this kind of back and forth. What are your thoughts on Ike getting involved in Twitter and how he does that? And he seems to have taken a much higher profile the past 2 years when he was trying to get a contract and maybe following Ryan Clark's lead. What are your thoughts, good, bad, or indifferent?
I would just rather just keep your mouth quiet. You know, you're going to get, in sports, handling the criticism is part of the business there, and you're always going to be open to it, especially as a defensive back. I mean, heck, that's a position that gets talked about so much, and you have to have such a short memory. And Ike just needs to let that stuff go and not let Stephen A. Smith get to him and pretend that it never even happened. Now that he has responded to it a few times, they know that. It's going to cause more people to know that they can get a reaction out of him. So, you know, in my opinion, just turn your other head and do your job and do your talking on the field as opposed to off of it.
Sometimes I wish Ike had two heads. He could turn the other head and maybe be able to put that head on a swivel and cover guys. What did you think of the secondary's job in terms of Taylor, Cortez Allen, Keenan Lewis? Yeah, a close but I think correct pass interference call on Keenan Lewis. Didn't end up hurting the team. Denver kept it down inside the 10, but didn't score a touchdown there. Maybe a missed tackle or two by Cortez. What were your thoughts? And as far as you could tell, did you see Curtis Brown get on the field at all as a defensive back?
I did not see Curtis Brown hit the field defensively. Now, doesn't mean he didn't. Maybe they ran a dime or so that I missed, but I didn't see that. I saw a lot of the nickel in there. Keenan Lewis and Cortez Allen missed a couple of those tackles that I talked about with these yards after the catch there. I thought the tackling was poor, but, you know, typical stuff. You know, people get so mad of why they give up so many completions, but the defense is predicated to tackle the catch and to keep everything in front of you. And they did that in the first half with good results, I thought. But in the second half is when You know, we saw the big play to Demaryius Thomas. We saw a couple more. I think it was Matt Willis, of all people, or was it I'm trying to remember one of these other ones that had a pretty good after the catch there. But, you know, you can't let these things happen because explosive plays, albeit the Steelers only allowed two explosive plays in the game, both to Thomas and one, of course, was a 71-yard touchdown there. You've got to tackle. You can't have those stupid penalties like they had the one with Keenan Lewis there on the pass interference there. You have to get your head around there. And I thought it was the right call. Now, on the second one in the end zone, I thought that was a great non-call because I thought both those guys were fighting each other for the ball there. But in the end, you know, you just got to make the play. And it's not in a defense that Dick LeBeau runs, you're not going to have a lot of contested balls for the most part because of being in zone. It's just a matter of you've got to close quickly, you've got to wrap up quickly, and you've got to make the tackle, and that's what the defense is predicated on doing. I thought on defensive, though, I didn't like Monday down the sideline not fighting through the block on the big play of Thomas there. Yeah, we could go back and, you know, heck, you could call holding on every damn call probably there is in a game, David, but I just thought Monday should have fought better through that. And I believe, what did Troy Polamalu have to say about that play this morning?
He said he went under the block, should have gone over the block, made a misread, his mistake. I mean, very simple, you know, analysis.
Yeah, and when you look at that play, again, it was a great play call against the defense there. Troy was caught underneath. Ike Taylor was blocked on the outside there. Hell of a lane opened up with a few blockers out in front after that. So
yeah, you know, for as many times as the Steelers have run similar plays, you rarely see that. And I guess one of the things that I thought was noticeable about how Peyton was running the offense is bringing that wide receiver from the left side down into the line of scrimmage, particularly on running plays. And it seemed to me that if you were watching this game again and they were playing the Steelers again, you know, you would know that they were going to run the ball because he called Stokely in once, he called Thomas in once to basically be on the edge so if the Steelers blitzed, it wouldn't disrupt the handoff. And so not that those guys on either play even threw big blocks, but it just meant that it was another body to go through on the edge and would take longer to get into the backfield to disrupt the handoff. I thought that was interesting. I also thought, you know, a good job by Collinsworth to talk about what was going on with Polamalu being in the defensive backfield, maybe Peyton checking out of run plays when he was in the box and then, you know, going to run plays when Troy was playing 25 yards off the line of scrimmage, playing a really deep safety. And they definitely focused on the camera in on that a bunch of times. And it just seemed like Denver was gouging him for 5, 6, 7 yards of carry there. And you know, over the course of the game, Troy, you know, I don't think anybody in the defense stood out for being, you know, making a lot of great plays. So I don't mean to pick on Troy. We didn't see a lot of special plays. And look, the reality is the defense, I guess, there was a sequence of 47 plays from 5 minutes left in the second quarter until early in the fourth quarter, and Denver ran three of them. And one was a kneel down at the half, and then one was the first down play before the Thomas touchdown, and then you had the Thomas touchdown. And that was it. That's all they saw of the ball there for a long, long period of time. So shouldn't have been a fatigue factor on the defense, but just nobody really stood out for me.
Yeah, and that's a great point on that. I'm going back through this play by play in the second half now here. And as you said, I mean, the Steelers came out in the second half, 8-minute 55 second drive, 16 plays, but they came away with three. There, you can't do that. You turn around, Manning, two-play drive after you think that you might have had him stiffen up on the sideline. Two-play drive ends in a touchdown. The Steelers turn around again. This time, luckily, it ended in a touchdown there to Mike Wallace, and they ate up another 6:18 on the clock. Now, the drive that was the killer, I think, was the one after that where Peyton Manning and them were in the shotgun. You know, running pretty much hurry up, and they drove 10 plays.
Sorry.
Oh, that's right. 80 yards, 10 plays in 4:48 there. You know, that was a killer there, and that, of course, ended You had the challenge there, of course, to Eric Decker there down at the 1 yard line. That was the right call by the officials there, by the way. And then that ends with Jacob Tammy 1 yard touchdown. They get the two point conversion there. But that was the key drive there, I think, in the beginning of the fourth quarter there. And then, of course, they followed it up with a Matt Prater field goal after that on another long drive. But they just could not get off the field there, in those two long drives against Denver once they went into that no huddle there. And albeit when you look at the stat sheet and the rushing yards that Denver had, let's see, what was it here total? 94 yards, 27 attempts. You know, on paper, that looks pretty good, but – you know, there were a couple of big runs in there, 12-yarder by McGahee, 11 by Lance Ball. I think Lance Ball, one of those, was a very key run in the game.
Yeah, he went for 10 yards right up the middle on his only carry, I think.
Yeah, 2 for 14 total for Lance Ball. So 7-yard average on, and I believe that was a key point of the game there as well, too. McGahee, I thought they controlled reasonably well. But, you know, like the Steelers, you know, they use their run to set up the pass, and you just got to force turnovers somehow. You got to get that pressure across the face, and they just weren't able to do it.
Dave, what did you think of Ben's play? And the reason I bring it up is there's a lot of on Twitter we see a lot of chatter about what Ben did, and I haven't seen a lot of people being critical of Ben. I've seen a few people being critical of Ben, but I want to say this. Look, Ben did a lot of good things last night, and at the end of the day, it's, you know, you can look at his numbers, and he did throw the interception, so that's a tough thing. He's trying to, you know, make a play happen, and a guy made a really good defensive play on him, Tracy Porter, returned it for a touchdown. But I'll say this. He scrambled and did a good job of making plays, but he made a lot of decisions where I think, honestly, the Steelers are lucky there weren't 3 or 4 picks last night. There are a couple balls around the goal line that got tipped up in the air, and those things happen. We see them across the league, and oftentimes when something like that happens, those are going to get picked. But he threaded some balls in over the middle of the field. A couple were catches, and a couple were almost picked by Porter. What was your, just in his decision-making process, what did you think?
I thought overall it was good, but once again, when you keep asking a quarterback to get in these third and long situations, he's going to have to try to force some balls sometimes, I think. And the one pass that got away from him, though, was the one to Heath Miller in the end zone. He didn't put enough air up underneath that one. That would have been.
Yeah, I don't think it got away from it. I think he threw it just the way he wanted to. He just didn't realize that the defensive back was going to be able to get up and make that play. I mean, it's not like he threw a touch pass. I mean, he zinged it in there, and it was a bad choice.
Yeah, and you know, one other time I think we saw Mike Wallace free that he had him down the seam. That probably would have been at least a big gainer, if not a touchdown. Overall, I thought. I mean, hey, if you didn't know the offensive coordinator was different. In this game and just watch some of the highlights, you saw some classic Ben being Ben, avoiding the pressure and making the play there after the play had broken down. Overall, I thought his decision-making was good. Now, of course, that last pass there that Tracy Porter picked off and took to the house was a poor decision right there. He just never saw him, I don't think, there. But for the most part, I mean, he didn't get helped out. There were a couple drops, I believe, in this game as well, too. So, you know, you got to factor that in as well. I thought he used his tight end well in Heath Miller. I thought he should have used him more in the game, to be honest with you, because I thought Miller had a nice matchup there, and I thought there was a lot of yards could have been had in there. But you know, not Ben's best game, but, you know, we've seen worse.
Oh, no question. No question. I thought, you know, and look, it's, I guess the question is, you know, are you going to do results-based analysis? Are you going to do process-based analysis? And I think the results for Ben were really very good, except for the last interception. The process, like I said, I thought he squeezed some stuff in there. That there was one pass over the middle. I think it was to Brown, but I'm not sure if it was Brown or Wallace, but it was amazing that he was able to squeak it in that window because it looked like both guys missed it. I mean, it was amazing that it looked like both guys actually missed it. And then they made the catch. And a few others like that, you know, the one they showed a couple times with Porter coming the other way across the middle, that could have been picked. But, yeah, look, at the end of the day, the numbers were good. The Steelers put up some points. And, you know, if you don't count the two-point conversion, basically they're in the 20s, and they get a chance to win the game at the end.
And I think that's the key point here. You know, it was set up top there. 3 minutes left in the game. You have a chance to win the ball game here. And after all that had happened in the game against the great Peyton Manning, and we were reminded of that several times heading into this week. And look, Peyton Manning is a great quarterback, and Denver's going to win a lot of ball games because of how good Peyton Manning is taking that short pass and all. But there's some things to improve on. They were without Ryan Clark in this game. They were without James Harrison, which I think James Harrison's going to be a week-to-week thing moving forward here on him. But I thought, you know, let's talk about a few other guys that had a good game. I thought Larry Foote, especially in the first half, was all over the place. I thought he played a good game. It seemed like he was multiplying all over the place there. You know, the pressure up front is something that they're going to have to do better, pushing the pocket. Brett Kiesel was kind of non-existent in this game. Ziggy Hood, you know, really kind of non-existent in this game. But as quick as Peyton gets the ball out, you know, I don't know how else you're going to have to stunt more and take some more chances running some fire X or some zone blitzes, you know, and guess on some early downs, you know, when they're passing.
Yeah. I like I said, just defensively, look, a couple things on, well, I'll give you a couple points offensively. I thought the receivers looked good. All three receivers who caught balls, I thought looked good, and Heath Miller. So good stuff there, like we talked about. Lucky, you know, feel fortunate that both Sanders and Brown hopefully are okay, because it looked like they did take big shots to the head. And I'm, like I said, I'm convinced that Antonio Brown was out when he hit the ground there. The offensive line, defensive lines, not nothing particularly notable. Didn't see much of Lawrence Timmons. The whole linebacking core, Lamar Woodley. It just, you know, the defense, I guess it's simple to say, the defense just didn't play that well. They weren't on that field that much. They kind of controlled the running game, I guess, but there were three or four kneel downs in there that'll change the kind of adjusted per play percentage a tad. And it just goes back to last year when you don't get a lot of turnovers, and they got 15 and 16 games last year. They got one last night. So they got one in one game, kind of the pace they've been on. And you don't get a lot of turnovers and you give up some big plays and you're not making big plays yourself. It's tough. And it just feels like this team has had trouble for the past, you know, year and a half getting off the field on important third downs. And again, maybe Peyton didn't face as many third downs last night because he was pretty efficient, but I just don't have the feeling that, you know, when it's third and five, that it's advantage defense.
Absolutely not. And Tomlin said it best. We didn't make significant plays, and they did. And I'm trying to look at a third down efficiency. 5 for 9. They held the Broncos 5 for 9 on third downs there.
I'm not sure that's considered holding, right?
I mean that's holding your own. I mean, it's not great by any stretch of the imagination. Ideally, you want that down about 34-35%, but to keep someone like Peyton Manning at 56%, you know, if you don't give up that big play there to Thomas there, you know, maybe, you know, it really would have changed the course of the game, in my opinion there. So 5 of 9, you know, against Peyton Manning. If you would have told me that going into it, I would have probably said, well, that's kind of what I expected there. It just comes down to pressure, man. And it's the same thing that we saw last year, not being able to get pressure on the quarterback. And that's a long time to expect. You know, that one touchdown, who was it, Jacob Tammy there, that had one of them there. That's a long time to give a quarterback time to – to look at the field, and a long time to ask your defensive backs to cover in an end zone type situation there. So, you know, when you kind of wrap this thing up and want to wrap a bow around it, it wasn't the best of performance, obviously, by the defense or the offensive line for that matter. But I think moving forward here, you know, there are some good things to take away from that. They've got to tackle the ball better on defense. They've got to, against the better quarterbacks, they've got to find a way to get pressure up the face there. I thought they did a good job limiting the explosive plays, except for the one to Thomas there. But, you know, you turn this, you can really turn this game into two or three plays, actually. The Thomas one, the interception by Ben, and perhaps one or two others there, and that's your ball game.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll tell you, as good as Peyton Manning was, it's clear that his arm strength isn't probably what it was when he was in his, you know, late 20s. I mean, there's effort throwing the ball, but he is just – it shows you how important it is to be cerebral in this game, because he is just so far ahead of the game in knowing what he wants to get done, that even though his physical tools are still very good, but they're diminished a little bit, and it's just he is a really, really bright quarterback, and it shows the film study and knowing what you want to get done out there and having good enough players around you, you can do things. And again, I'm surprised the Denver offensive line was able to control – well, I'm surprised Denver was able to control both lines as well as they did, and I think that's it. And special teams was kind of a non-factor. I guess it was notable that Chris Rainey was not the guy originally put back there to handle kickoffs or punts, and Antonio Brown did a really nice job on his second punt return getting some yardage. Rainey was dying to take that ball out in the last kickoff. But as I said, I don't know if Matt Prater was trying to kick him extra high and make him be 5 or 7 yards deep in the end zone or not, because Swisham was knocking him, you know, into the stands or through the uprights. But nothing notable. Drew Butler's first punt wasn't great. His second punt was excellent down at the, you know, 1 foot line. So that wasn't a big factor in the game. It just, as you said, at the open, it came down to the explosive plays. And unfortunately, you know, we can look back to where we were last year and having that game. It was 35-7, and we just sat here and kind of laughed about how wrong we were and how beat up the Steelers got. And this week, I don't think we were wrong. I think what we saw was some of what we expected. I think, again, I'll just go back and say I think we're both probably a little surprised that we got dominated on the lines.
Yeah, I didn't expect to get pressure on Manning in this game. I really didn't. That's why I picked against the Steelers in this game, because I thought it would ultimately be close, which, you know, you take away that last pick six there, and it is right there within reach. You know, special teams didn't lose this game. I was surprised that they didn't put Rainey back there. I guess just the first game and worried about a rookie back there. To me, you got to get the ball in that kid's hands as much as possible. Now, although Antonio Brown did have the nice 23-yard return there, they only came away with 3 points, and you know, on that following drive there, and you know, you cannot give Peyton Manning, you know, going down and only getting 3 points against a Peyton Manning led defense is a win, you know, for that team that you're facing there. So. We'll see going forward here how the special teams shakes out. And Swisham, you know, what was it, five touchbacks in total there, I think was the stats. I don't even think they had a kickoff return there. Yeah, five kickoff touchbacks there. And the two punts, only Jim Leonard returned 2 for 11-yard average. So, you know, overall, you have to think that special teams is definitely not your cause of this loss. And even though they didn't play terribly well in the preseason,
yeah. And my thought on the Rainey thing is, I don't have any problem if it's not Rainey, if it's Antonio Brown. I mean, he made the Pro Bowl last year. He's as dangerous as Rainey, if not more so. So I got no problem as long as we're using our best guys back there. Fine with me.
Yeah, and how did the I forgot to look at how the tackles broke down in this game. Larry Foote, 7 total, 8 combined. Paul Amalo had 5. Timmons had 5. Keenan Lewis had 4. You know, just you got, you know, it comes down to pressure, David. I don't know how we can say this otherwise. You got to get pressure, and you got to force the turnovers.
All right. Well, you know, that pretty much puts a, as you say, put a bow on this one. I mean, I guess the small sort of
line. How scared are you of the Jets now that they popped up 40 or whatever points now? You know, really are is, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick certainly did help them out quite a bit, and it looked like the Bills just quit in this game there, and they, you know, they lost David Nelson and Fred Jackson, I believe, to injuries in that game. How scared are you of the Jets right now?
No, I'm not that scared of the Jets. I mean, they got one touchdown on a punt return. They got one on an interception return. Those things happen. But, you know, that gets you down. I mean, look, they put up 48 points. They lead the league in scoring. So good for them after all the heat they took and scoring one touchdown the whole preseason. Mark Sanchez, I saw his first interception before they put any points up, and I'm sure everybody at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey, was, you know, basically going, oh, my God, here we go. It's going to be, you know, this is going to be horrific because he threw a little shovel pass and got tipped up in the air and picked. But, yeah, they went on and did some good things. Stephen Hill, the rookie, had two touchdown catches. They had another rookie, I think, with the first touchdown catch in the end zone. So good for them. But, you know, nobody I'd rather be playing than the Jets right now. I mean, yeah, maybe there are three or four teams I'd rather be playing. But bring the Jets in and let's go. But I will say the Jets' defense is solid and their secondary is solid. So it should be a good test for the Steelers. It's not going to be a layup, but I think it's the team the Steelers defense should be happy to have coming in.
Yeah, and we'll get more into this game, breaking it down later in the week, of course, on Friday there. We'll have a guest on Wednesday, a beat writer, to talk about it, and we'll mop up the rest of this Sunday night game on Wednesday as well. One quick note, Mike Wallace did not get his deal. I was wrong there. I really thought that, you know, based on what information was out there, which we don't know what he was offered, what he turned down exactly. You can read whatever reports that you want to read and believe there. But one interesting quote, though, that Mike Prisuta put up, saying a team official told him that we'll try again next year. So hard to read into a tweet and a small quote like that what that means, but it can only mean one thing if indeed that was exactly said as Mike Prisuta put it out there. It means that you know, they probably intend on franchising him next year, and we, you know, we won't know what Mike Wallace actually probably was offered and turned down. But Mike Wallace, he might have cost himself some that might have been a bad decision if he ends up being franchised next year, because let's face it, $12.74 million is what it's looking like now over these two seasons.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, who knows what they're going to do next year? It's far enough away that the silver lining is Mike Wallace is playing for his money. So if you're a Steeler fan, he's got every incentive to have a great year and go out and earn a big contract. So that's the positive. I mean, guessing what's going to happen is, you know, strictly that. So
I thought he played good last night.
Yeah, look, I don't know if he didn't line up in the right place on the play that, you know, the lineup that set up the touchdown. It looked like there was some confusion, and Ben said he should have called timeout. He said we were a mess out there. That happens. I'm not going to put that on him not being in camp. I'm not going to put the throw on Mike Wallace either. So unfortunate that all went down. But, yeah, I thought, you know, if there was a high point, it was the passing game. And Todd Haley's offense looked like, those are his best players. I think he's aware of it. And if he wasn't aware of it going into last night, he's aware of it now.
Absolutely. I guess the only other way to wrap this up, David, is, you know, nobody should be heading for the bridges just yet, correct?
Yeah. No. Yep. Look, it's a very interesting schedule here. Always a possibility of losing that first game. The last seven Super Bowl winners now, not different teams, but for 7 years, everybody who's won a Super Bowl started 0-1 yesterday. That's the Saints, the Giants, the Steelers, and the Pack. So they're all 0-1. It's been a while since the Patriots won a Super Bowl. I was like, well, that can't be right, but it has been a while, I think, if I've got my dates right. But, yeah, no need to panic. They got another game, and we'll see how things go. But the schedule sets up with the Jets, who are, you know, I think everybody projects them to be at least around a 500 team. So that's a reasonable team in the NFL. And then you go to Oakland, and that's always been a tough road trip. The Steelers lost their last time out there. They get the bye, and then they get the Eagles at home. And the Eagles sure didn't look good either, but they won. They won. I guess it's better to look bad and win than to look real good and lose. So the schedule is going to be, you know, the first 5 weeks really set up here. We're going to know a lot more about. We know a lot more about this team today, and we're going to know a lot more 4 weeks from now.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think they will improve. Let's hope the injuries to the offensive line are not serious there. That's the only big thing that can derail. Let's hope we get James Harrison back. Maybe not this week, but maybe the week after that. But, It is, that was what it was. It wasn't the ass kicking that we received last year, I don't think, against the Ravens. I thought that was a much more lopsided loss in that game. I think there is some things to build on from this game Sunday night. And yeah, we're 0-1. Deal with it. Let's move on and get back to .500 against the Jets.
All right. Well, you can follow Dave on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow me on Twitter at David M. Todd. Thanks for the donations. Keep them coming. Appreciate that. We'll have a busy week this week, but maybe on Friday we'll get to some questions. If you want to email us at terriblepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast account is at terriblepodcast. So 0-1 for the Steelers, not the perfect start, but we'll get into what's going on after the Mike Tomlin presser, and we'll be back with you on Wednesday. Thanks, as always. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.